thunder. Boom, bap, can I hear it once again? Boom, bap, tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom, bap, can I hear it once again? Boom, bap, tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world.
Yes. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Thank you, Michael Franti, for reminding us of that. And this is Dove. I'll be with you for the next hour, bringing you a very special interview with a human. And that's what this program is. It's a new show. Just starting it out, just trying to get it going. Basically, every Wednesday from 5 to 6, we'll be interviewing a human here at the radio station. And we have a human. I actually found a human. Hey, human. How's it? Do you speak English?
Yes.
Hello. What's your name?
They call me the Commodore.
You can put the mic up a little closer there. You know how those things work.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey. The Commodore?
Well, that's what I go by.
Uh-huh. What, where were you born?
Santa Barbara, California.
Really?
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing, like, just for the listener out there, I've known this person here, this human, for quite some years, and I never knew he was born in Santa Barbara. That's actually what this show's all about, is it's when you actually take the time to interview another human that you've known about their life. You'd be amazed at how much you learn about them. So you're born in Santa Barbara. Wow, California. I've been there. Cool. From your mom, obviously. And what did she name you when you were born?
Peter.
Peter?
Yeah.
Ah. What was your mom? What was your mom's first name?
Kathleen.
Kathleen.
I guess everybody in the country club calls her Kathy.
Okay. Uh-huh. And, cool, Santa Barbara, interesting. And you, did your mom live in Santa Barbara?
It's still there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Was she married with your dad, or?
Several dads.
Oh, okay.
I was one of those lucky guys, you know, you don't get one dad, you get a couple.
Okay.
So, yeah. It's always interesting.
Right.
Okay, who's this guy?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So, anyway.
When you were born, was your birth dad around, or?
Yeah, they were still married. Real dad. That lasted, I guess, I don't know, a couple of years. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've got a couple of sisters as well. And then the old hits the fan, and they separate. You know, that's it. We move. And we ended up moving to Hawaii. Believe it or not, that was back in 57, I believe, 56, 57, around there.
Wow.
I think I was like 5 years old, and back then it was a Constellation. I think they flew from California to Oahu. That's where I lived when we landed. Mm-hmm. And it was like a 17-hour flight. And
17 hours?
17 hours.
Wow.
Okay, you know, props. None of this jet stuff.
To get from Santa Barbara-ish or L.A. or somewhere to
right.
to Oahu.
Oahu.
Yeah. Wow. 1957. 57.
Mm. And I remember everybody going, wow, that's Peter. We made it. He's getting off the plane now. You know, I had the captain's hat on. I was wearing the coat, walking up and down, you know.
Uh-huh.
Jeez, you know. Seats were too wide back in those days, you know. You don't get to, like, the middle section or nothing. And you could smoke.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't smoking back then.
Thank goodness. A lot more people smoked then during that era.
But yeah. Oahu was a trip. We lived in a nice little town called Lanikai. Still there. And my old man worked for KGMBT television back in the days.
Oh, wow.
And spent a couple of years over on Oahu, went to school barefoot. I thought that was unique.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wow, barefoot.
So so you're born in Santa Barbara. Your real dad, or your, I mean, I wouldn't say real because that's all, but your sperm donor dad was around, and then your parents split.
Right.
And then you came to Oahu with your mom and her new husband, who
correct.
Was the one your next dad.
Yeah.
When you were five. Gotcha.
Stepfather.
Yeah. You get along with him?
For the most part, yes.
Yeah. Cool.
I mean, he right. tried.
Yeah.
I won't go into that because he was different.
Okay.
But nonetheless.
Your mom loved him at that
Well,
point.
That's why you get married, I guess. Right?
Yeah. Right.
Someone says, hey, you want to marry me?
Uh-huh.
And then what? Oh, okay.
Right.
So anyway, you're a kid. What do you know?
Right. And where did he work on Oahu?
KGMB.
Right. So that was his main job.
Pretty much.
At a TV station.
Yep.
Wow.
First one here on Oahu.
Wow. What did he do there?
He was a senior executive, advertising or something like that. I don't remember.
Huh. Right.
But back then, he had to go to work over the Pali. And the Pali didn't have a tunnel back then.
Uh-huh.
And there were days when, if you know where I'm talking for you locals out there, it gets a little windy up there.
Mm.
And there were all kinds of stories about people jumping off, and the wind was so strong it'd blow you right back up to where you were. And, you know, he had this small little Ford that he used to drive, which they wouldn't let him drive sometimes. It was too windy. You know, it's the kind that had the porthole, the T-bird with the porthole, he was a big shot.
Uh-huh.
And, we lived on Oahu. I went to Kailua Elementary.
Oh, wow.
And we lived there for a couple of years, and then he got transferred, and we moved back to the East Coast, which is quite a change in weather.
Wow.
We arrive as kids, my sisters and myself and mom, and we get there, and of course, there's no shoes that will fit us because our feet, since we went barefoot all the time, we got kind of wide.
Mm.
So for the first week or two, we're walking around in the snow barefoot. My mother yelling outside, get you kids, get in here. You're going to catch pneumonia.
And where was this on the East Coast?
This was in Greenwich, Connecticut.
Wow.
And he used to...
How old were you about that, around then?
Oh, I'm thinking I'm 8 or 9 by then.
Okay, right.
I can remember when Hawaii became the 50th state. That was kind of like a big deal back then.
Mm.
And that was in 59.
Right.
And I didn't quite know what to think of that.
Mm.
Mom, what's going on? Everybody was kind of weird. You didn't quite know.
Mm.
But to this day, of course, there's still a lot of stuff going on about that. But
mm-hmm.
anyway, yeah, 59, I guess 60, we finally made the move back to Connecticut.
And your mom was being a mom, right?
That's what moms do back then.
Right, true.
Three kids. And
yeah, and you relocate depending on where the work is, right?
Right.
So he went back east.
He worked for a good spot. J. Walter Thompson is a pretty good ad agency in New York, one of the biggest.
Wow.
And we did about 5 years in Connecticut, and then he found a new job, and we ended up moving to Mexico.
Mexico? The
country
of Mexico.
The country, yeah. well, where else would you
know? Yeah, I don't know. Town in Mexico somewhere?
Yeah. It's in Nevada. It's right outside.
Right.
But
wow. What were you doing in Mexico?
Well, I was going to school. You know, I wasn't doing anything. My old man was he working for a big damn company. And what they did back in those days is if you were a high-level executive, they moved you. They paid to get you in a house and they got you into schools and
right
and there you went.
So, wow. So the New York, wherever he was working in New York, then moved him to Mexico to work there.
So now we're down in Mexico City, and originally he was supposed to have gone to Peru, to Lima. That's where General Foods. Can I say General Foods?
Yes, you can.
Hey, they got money. They can afford this. But they had a huge earthquake in Lima. And it leveled the company.
Hmm.
And so instead of moving to Peru, he was relocated to Mexico, and DF, Mexico City, Distrito Federal.
Wow.
Which was kind of cool because I don't think I ever would have learned Spanish had I not lived there.
Sure.
I wasn't the best student.
Right. Mm. And what a change just to go from living East Coast and then all of a sudden you're going to school in Mexico. How many other white kids were there going to school in?
Actually, there was quite a colony of us. There was like
Is it like a private school? Or?
Yeah, I went to a small little school. It must have been 200 kids.
Okay.
It was a private school, and it's where all the executives' kids went. You know, all my friends, or their dads were executives for Coca-Cola or
gotcha.
Or some damn thing. But
yeah.
It was fun. We lived in a nice neighborhood. And Mexico is a beautiful place, by the way.
Yeah.
It's not all desert.
Right.
And I learned actually how to speak Spanish. Mm-hmm. And to this day, that's proven to be pretty cool.
Yeah. Super helpful. And so your sisters, how many sisters?
Us. Let's see now. Three.
Three sisters. So there's four of you. And this, you all lived in Mexico? So you lived in Mexico with your sisters, too?
Yep.
Wow. One, you're the only son.
I'm the only boy.
Ah, grew up with three sisters.
Thank God I was the oldest.
Ah, the oldest
son. They didn't take any mercy on me.
Three little sisters.
They didn't take any mercy on me.
Did they all learn Spanish too, I would assume?
We all did, and they stuck us in a school that we had special classes where we obviously weren't up to speed. Most of the schools down there were half English, half Spanish. That was pretty cool. So we became like bilingual. But we were kind of fresh off the boat, as you might say. And we had to take special classes outside and learn, you know, to get up to speed. After about a year, you get it.
Did you, so your parents, it sounds like your dad was working a lot. Your mom was taking care of the four of you in Mexico. Did she listen to music or anything like that? Or
only the stuff that I brought home.
Oh, okay. Right?
No, they listened to a lot of stuff. No, they were fun.
How old were you when you lived in Mexico?
Jeez, I got down there, I guess I was about 12. I know I was kind of ticked off because I just made the baseball team.
Oh.
I was playing Little League, and I remember getting my uniform, and I went, man, this is so cool. I'm like starting, you know. And then suddenly it's like, okay, forget that. And that was kind of like my first downer in life. What? I got cleats and a uniform and I can't play baseball?
Because?
We had to move.
Oh.
Now, right. What's really funny about that is my parents are a little strange. They had animals that were not the normal kind. For example, we had a pet skunk.
Oh, wow.
All right. Now, it was all de-scented, if you will.
Right.
Whatever they do. And we went through about three of those. My mother, being the loving woman that she was, would try to, like, oh, cute little thing, and bite her finger right through. You know, they have sharp little teeth.
Yeah.
But
they're wild.
Well, they are.
You domesticate a skunk?
Yeah, domesticated skunk. And you know what? They're like cats. They're nocturnal.
Right.
But they're really cool.
Wow.
And of course, we came up with an original name for them, Skunky. And we used to play this game on the porch. And they don't have very good eyesight.
Uh-huh.
All right. So what they do, well, we'd run and play hide and seek. Okay? And we'd go and jump behind a chair and here comes Skunky. You can hear his feet. You know, he got long nails, and they come up. And then when they find you, what he would used to do is stand up on his front feet, tap his legs, and then stick his rear end around as if to spray you. But nothing came out.
Right. But he still went through the motions.
But he still went through it.
Yeah.
And he was pretty cool. We ended up donating him to the the zoo in Mexico City. They didn't have a skunk.
Oh, wow.
Because he kept escaping into the neighbor's yard, and they were Korean ambassadors. And they didn't like the idea of a skunk being in their yard.
Right.
So, yeah, so long, Skunky.
Do you have any just regular cats or dogs or anything like that?
Oh, yeah.
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 But,
usual. But you know, Skunky was, Skunky.
Uh-huh. So your mom, is she still alive?
Oh, yeah. She lives in Santa Barbara.
Oh, that's what she said. She's back in Santa Barbara.
Back in Santa Barbara.
Oh, that's a full circle.
My sisters are in San Luis Obispo.
Mm-hmm. All three?
Two.
Okay.
And the third one is somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. So after Mexico, so you're all growing up in Mexico. You got a pet skunk in the house, and you're going to school there. And I mean, what did you do for as a teenager in Mexico?
Started playing polo.
Oh wait, started playing polo in Mexico.
My old man got into playing polo. And we had access to an hacienda through an acquaintance of his who was a big landowner down there.
Uh-huh.
And he basically chopped down a cornfield and made it a polo field.
Wow.
And we started a club, and we used to go out and spend weekends at the hacienda. This thing was built in 1544. It's got bullet holes in the ceiling from when Pancho Villa, whoever came through there. I mean,
right.
It was like wood-burning stoves, and it was a full-on hacienda, you know, hundreds of acres. And
wow.
For some reason, these fellas decided they started playing polo. So at about 12, I remember, we all had horses, and so we'd go out and ride around Mexico, a couple of young gringo kids going, this is interesting.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that was the beginning of polo.
Wow.
Kind of sports. Tennis, polo, that kind of thing.
But then you said you up and moved.
Yeah, after about 5-6 years, I'm trying to remember now, I went off to college in Florida. Went to a really fun school called Rollins, which is in Winter Park, right outside Orlando.
And went off on your own, left your family.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I went to boarding school, and you know, I was always away. I mean, for me to go home was usually Christmas time because it was too far to go. You know, and so I would stay there most holidays, and it worked out pretty good. But
went off to college.
Yeah, and so from boarding school, I just went ahead and stayed up there for the summer, worked with my girlfriend's dad who had a roofing business, and, you know.
Girlfriend?
Yeah, I had a girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
You know, I met her doing a play. The boarding school I went to had a pretty good theater arts thing there. And so I used to start off by, doing lights and backstage stuff because I was kind of shy. I'm not going on the stage.
Right. But you like to be a part of the whole production.
But it was just, it was a way not to have to go to study hall.
Oh, all right.
Just sign out. Theater.
Right.
So I'd go down there and mess around. And one thing led to another. And they said, why don't you audition for this? Why don't you audition for that? And I went, oh, okay, I'll do that. Oh, which reminds me. Earlier on when I was in Mexico, I went on television a couple of times. That was my first beginning into the big lights, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I worked in a vocal group, small vocal group, and we'd have dances and things like that. And the gal who ran it, she seemed to know everybody, and ended up getting us up on a couple of television shows down in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And there I am singing and stuff on Mexican television. In English, what am I, 12, 13?
Wow.
Anyway, so that was my beginning to, that thing led to another. I got cast in a play to do a part of a play called Out of the Frying Pan, a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And from there on in, I guess I was kind of hooked because I kept doing theater.
Peter. Yeah. I would love to see. That'd be so cool if you could dig up a footage of that, right?
Oh, good
Lord.
Like,
this was your life. There he is. That'd be amazing.
Oh, man.
On TV in Mexico.
Oh, I was a pudgy, freckled kid. Oh, God. I was like Wayne Newton.
Uh-huh.
Whoa.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Interview with a Human. This is a new show we just started here at KKCR. This is Dove, and I'm interviewing a human every Wednesday from 5 to 6. If you're a human out there and you'd like to be interviewed, you can always contact us here at 826-7774. Leave a message on the office thing and give us your name and number and say, hey, you'd like to come in and tell us a little bit about yourself. I think it's so fascinating to find out about other humans. And thanks for sharing your story. Coming in, Peter. Pretty cool. So boarding school, I didn't know you got into acting, working with plays, and then you went to college?
Yes. I kept continuing.
Did you say
on.
Florida?
Yeah, I went to a pretty good school down there, a small school called Rollins. It's in Winter Park, Florida.
Uh-huh.
And they had a really good theater program there, and I just kind of fell right into place with it.
Uh-huh.
After that, I only lasted 1 year there. My mother had a stroke, and suddenly everything changes.
Wow.
So...
Was that in Mexico?
No, we had just moved. Mm-hmm. We were moving back to the States and back to Santa Barbara.
Mm.
And she was told by her doctor that she had some kind of like appendicitis or something.
Mm.
Well, anyway, she gets to Santa Barbara and checks in with a doctor. And they put her in the hospital immediately. Because she'd had a stroke, and she's walking around trying to move a family while suffering this, you know, stroke.
Right.
And I was in Florida, and I was told, my stepfather called me up and says, get your butt out here right now. I went, what?
And you're the oldest child and the only son.
And I'm like 18, maybe, right. Something like that. And so suddenly I'm like the man in the family here.
Mm-hmm.
So I get a ticket, leave everything. Fly out to Cali and tell the taxi driver, here's the address I want to go to. And I haven't been there in years, so I don't know what's going on. So I arrive, and back door's open, and all right, there's eggs in the refrigerator. I'm okay. And a note saying, okay, be in touch. Well, my life really changed because now suddenly school isn't really important. My youngest sister, she was... I don't know, 9 or 10, maybe something. So my mother's in the hospital. I just got to a new place I hadn't been to before, or I had, but didn't know it. And suddenly I'm like the man of the family.
Hmm.
My stepfather and sisters hadn't come up from Mexico yet. They were busy moving. You know, it was a huge turmoil thing going on there.
Mm-hmm.
So I took care of her, made sure she got to school, and that's where suddenly your life goes, okay, left turn. And so we did that for a few years. It took Mom a while to kind of get back. And so it was difficult getting back into school after that. But I did keep my hand in theater. There were a number of theaters in Santa Barbara, Alicama Playhouse. I did a bunch of plays there. Mm-hmm. Theater was always fun. I loved theater.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some good ones. And for about 5 years, we hung in there, and everything was going well. And then I was talking to some friends of mine who I'd worked with in the past with some of the shows, and they suggested that I move to Los Angeles.
Mm.
And because they said, well, you know, you're an actor, you're a theater arts guy, you know, you need to be there. You know, Santa Barbara ain't going to do it for you.
Right.
And they convinced me, and so I loaded up the truck, and I moved to Beverly
right.
Hills, that is.
Yeah.
And
which is only really an hour away. Or
Yeah. It was 90 miles.
Yeah.
And so that was my beginning adventure in La La Land.
Wow.
And I know you know the area.
Yeah. So you moved to Beverly Hills to do what? Just to try to...
Well, you go get your glossies. You get your 8x10s and you make the route.
I see.
Or the route.
To get work, like you went there to work.
Like as an actor, you know, I worked in a place called Joe Allen's, which is a notorious restaurant, one in New York, one in L.A., and I don't know if there's another one, but it was a classic spot where all the actors would hang out. It was a big spot in New York on the west side in the theater district, and, you know, red checkered tablecloths, you know, cheap cheeseburgers, you know, but... Everybody hung out there. You never knew who you're going to meet.
Mm-hmm.
So my first job is working at Joe Allen's in Los Angeles.
Mm.
And it was amazing. I'll never forget the first celebrity I waited on. It was Karen Ballantyne.
Mm.
Now, I don't know if you remember Karen Ballantyne, but if you ever watched Love Boat,
mm-hmm.
I'm looking down. I go, oh, my God. I'm like starstruck. You know, I'm new to L.A., and right. I got this job in this place where everybody's a celebrity, and I don't know who I'm bumping into, directors and casting people, and I'm going, uh-huh. Oh, geez, I better pay attention here. So, that was my first job, waiting tables.
Wow. And what was your, where to go from there? Like,
well, I got to meet, since I was a newbie, I didn't get the dinner shift because that's where the money was.
Right.
So I got the lunch shift. But that was okay. I met, you know, Steve Martin, you know, a lot of these guys. I mean, everybody was in there. You just went,
right.
Geez, who's the day? And so at first you're just kind of like overwhelmed. And then finally you go, these are regular people. They're having a drink, you know.
Sure.
John Travolta, by the way, he only drinks Perrier and orange juice. But anyway, so I got to meet some people. And it turns out a couple of them were pretty real cool to me. They said, do you have a SAG card? I went, no. How do I get one? Now, I don't know what a SAG card goes for today. I'm guessing probably $1,500.
Yeah, not sure.
It was probably back then $300, $400. Mm. But the trick to SAG card is you have to work professionally. Mm. And there's a thing called the Taft-Hartley Law, which means you're allowed as a non-union person or actor to work on a film that is union, and they give you one pass. But then once you work on that show, you are now considered a professional, and so now you can get your SAG card.
Mm.
So I met some people that helped me out. Ronnie Hallen, I hope you're still alive, Ronnie. I love you to death. Her sister, by the way, is Penny Marshall. Mm. Welcome to L.A. Mm-hmm. It's this small world out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I never I was at a bar called The Improvisation, which was a fun place. Some of you folks may know of it. On Melrose there, and they had a comedy club, Bud Freeman, and, oh, man, I saw a lot of acts down there, Billy Crystal, Robin Williams. It was just a hoot. And I remember coming up to the bar going, oh, Ronnie, gosh, good to see you. And it's her sister. She goes, I'm not Ronnie, I'm Penny. And she was like furious in my face. How dare you?
Uh-huh.
But they looked alike.
Right.
And from the I just didn't know. Oh, I felt like insulted her. You know. Like, oh man, she was a big star back then.
Uh huh.
You know. Jeez. So, L.A. was fun. That was 10 years. I spent 10 years in L.A. one night.
Oh wow. Yeah. Right.
Uh-huh. And anyway, from
so did you see good music during that era?
Music really wasn't my thing just yet. That
right.
happened later.
Mm.
Working with Ronnie, they'd come in with her friends and they said, hey, let's get you your SAG card here. Let's get you going. And so I went on to get a film. It was a comedy western, and we filmed out in Agoura.
Mm-hmm.
The old Paramount Movie Ranch.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know where that is.
Mm-hmm, exactly,
but,
yeah.
It was a fun movie, and mm-hmm. so I quit my job at the restaurant, and I went, okay, I'm in the movies.
Mm.
This is it.
Yeah.
And, of course, yeah, right. So I did that for a whole summer. That was terrific. Had a place in Malibu. Huh. That was pretty terrific. You know Malibu.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Yeah, some of that Paramount, that... I think some of it burnt in the fires.
It did. There
yeah.
was. We always were very fearful of that place catching fire. It was so dry.
So beautiful, too. All the oak trees and
yeah,
gorgeous.
Yeah, it was neat.
You see it in all the old westerns. And,
well, pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, good Lord. They filmed a lot of them there.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
And,
so you were working in the film industry.
Well, you
got to.
That? That's what I moved there for.
Yeah, I didn't know any of that. See, I'm finding all about you.
And, you know, I'd make the rounds to, you know, casting directors, and I was offered the script for Baba Black Sheep. I turned it down.
Mm.
I went, what was I thinking?
Right.
Uh-huh. But
do you have any girlfriends during that time?
I'm not going to talk to you about that.
What? That's where the juice is.
Yeah, well,
no,
you know.
Yeah. I mean, up to this point, you're single, right?
That's
and
correct.
Living in L.A. and
mm-hmm.
working
oh, there, there
working odd jobs and acting when you can. And
pretty much.
Yeah.
Attending bar. After the movie finished, it's kind of like, okay, now what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the phone's not ringing off the hook. I'm not getting any parts.
Right.
But I did do some movies here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, the last one I think was called The Happy Hooker Goes to Washington.
I thought that was going a different direction there for a second. Uh-huh.
But it was a fun movie. It was a comedy.
Uh-huh.
Joey Edgerton. And,
mm-hmm.
and Amy, oh God, I can't remember her name. Anyway, these beautiful women, I'm doing a scene with these gorgeous gals. They were just, they were hot.
Uh-huh.
All right? And did that. There was a bunch of people in the movie. It was fun. It didn't do very well, but Star Wars was coming out at back time, so, you know, it took second fiddle to anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, it was tending bar and worked in a really great spot right on Sunset in Doheny. And a lot of celebrities would come in there.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those places, politicians. You just didn't know who.
Right. You mentioned you played polo in Mexico. Did you play any polo in the L.A. area? Or?
No. Nope. I was asked to, actually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need horses to play polo.
Yes, that's true.
And people that play the game, uh-huh. you know, they spend a lot of money on their horses.
Right.
And they don't like people, like, jumping on them.
Yeah, right.
You know,
true.
God forbid, and I've seen it happen, where someone borrows a horse and, oh, broken leg.
Right.
Ouch.
Yeah.
But there was a polo club in Los Angeles, still is,
uh-huh.
and a lot of celebs go and play out there. It's mm-hmm. kind of fun. I really didn't get back into it until I moved back over here, which was 87.
So this is like end of the 70s, early 80s, because you mentioned Star Wars there. So
yeah.
So what finally ran you out of L.A.? You just were over it?
I was
10
over
years.
It. Yeah. I was over it.
And then where'd you go from there?
Came here to Kauai.
Oh, wow.
And since I'd lived...
What made you make that move?
Girlfriend? Gal I was dating at the time. her folks lived in Hanalei.
Uh-huh.
And her brother worked for a Zodiac company over here.
So this was a woman that you knew, you met
in Los
over
Angeles.
There.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And we moved here together. We were tired of L.A. She had been involved with a couple of... She'd be in a pharmacy and someone would draw a gun and go, everybody on the ground. You know, it's like, this happened a couple of times.
Uh-huh.
And this is in broad daylight.
Right.
Like Santa Monica Boulevard.
Right.
On the west, you know, Westwood. So I said, okay, L.A. is over. We're out of here.
Yeah.
Enough of this. So we loaded up the truck and we moved to Hanalei.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they had a nice little three-bedroom house down there on Becky Road. And so we, they put us up there until we could find our own place to go.
Wow.
I ended up working for a Zodiac company. And I didn't really know much about Kauai at that time. And every day I'd get on a Zodiac and go up and down the Nepali coast a couple times a day.
Going. This is over 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I did that for a couple of years. And I went, okay, I'm done. I'm broken. I mean, if anybody knows Nepali Coast, you know that it gets a little rough out there sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And a Zodiac boat does bounce you around. But I have to admit, I've been in almost every tunnel out there.
Mm-hmm.
I've been back in the valleys. It is a very special place. There is no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty cool to come right in and get an idea of what Kauai is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really know a whole lot of people because I did that for 2 years. I was always on the ocean.
Mm.
And after that, I don't know. I can't remember. Let's see. I stopped doing Zodiac boats.
See, your long-term memory is pretty good, but your short-term memory, as we get closer and closer to the now, you start forgetting. Isn't that funny?
Oh, I ended up having a couple of jobs. I got a CDL license.
Mm-hmm.
I drove a tour bus for like 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I worked for one of the bigger companies over here.
Mm-hmm.
And I started off as a low life, like you do. You know, it's union.
Right.
So you got to start somewhere. And I ended up working up and became the number one driver.
Mm-hmm.
People were retiring. And I go, what? We got a Howley as the number one driver?
Right.
You know. That's a gringo for you Spanish people.
Uh-huh.
But that was a good living. After that, I don't remember. Things happen so quick.
You wound up at the polo fields, right, somehow?
That's what happened, yeah.
Yeah.
I ended up taking over down there, and this is...
Is that Anini?
Anini Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going back, let's see, how many years now? 13 years ago, maybe. And I remember coming down there,
Oh, more than 13.
I can't remember now.
Yeah, I don't even think there's been polo.
No, there hasn't been for a while. Yeah. But, 89 is when I started down there. Mm-hmm. And
that's more than 13 years ago, by the way.
Okay, I'm not doing my math correctly. Too many balls to the head.
I didn't say 13, you meant 30, right? Yeah, 13, right. 30, something like that.
Hey, I took a few falls.
And then you wound up at the polo field late
80s.
Yeah,
and it was just by accident. Uh-huh. I started announcing the polo matches.
Right.
Because I knew the game, and it was a natch for me. And one thing led to another. Next thing I know, I've got four horses.
Wow.
And I started playing, and it was like, cool.
Wow.
Polo is a Rolls Royce of sports. I mean, I had to pick an expensive one.
Right.
Uh-huh. But it was a good time. The polo field back in its day was, a lot of people still come up to me going, hey, are we going to have any more polo again?
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the gods of real estate are saying no.
Mm-hmm.
They only wanted to give us a one-year lease, which is ridiculous because mm-hmm. you're bringing in a lot of horses. I was very fortunate. I got to play with some of the best in the world. Kauai was a premier polo field, especially in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
Even over on Oahu now, they're getting ready to sell off that whole area on the North Shore where they've been playing polo for years, and all the big shots were going there. I think polo is going, we're going to see it go bye-bye for a while. But it has its ups and downs. It comes and goes. There was a lot of it over here early on, and it'll be back. It's a fun game. Everybody has fun. You get to dress up. And somebody always has a bottle of Dom.
And from all your early experience in Mexico with horses, at a young age, you had lots of experience with horses under your belt. So you kind of jumped right into that.
Yeah, it kind of worked out really well.
Yeah.
And especially since I knew how to play the game.
Right.
It was a wonderment to me to be so lucky to have those years and play with some of the people that I played with. I mean, they're still playing, some of them, and they came from all over the world, from Argentina, right. from England. And here I am, little old me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm playing with these guys. I'm going, whoa.
Yeah.
This is like playing with Magic Johnson or somebody, LeBron. Right. You know, it's like, yeah.
Right. Did you actually live down there at Anini at the polo fields?
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
I
became the caretaker and manager of the place. I did that for a bunch of years.
Wow.
I don't know, 13 or 14 years.
Wow. That must have been an amazing time.
Well, it was a lifestyle because, you know, horses, you never know what they're going to do.
Right.
I mean, they get stuck in places, you know, they hurt themselves, you know, you just don't know. And so it's 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
And people would sneak on the property and try to bareback these polo ponies.
Mm.
And I went, well, you lived. Mm-hmm. You lived.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that was a fun time in life and a fun time for everybody that came down. And hopefully you were one of them and you remember those days.
Yeah, I didn't go to the polo fields that much. I would always drive by when they were playing and see them playing and see the crowd and stuff. I first met you. I think you were helping out working at the old Amelia's, the airport.
That's true. I did that as well. I was at the polo field then, and part-time work.
It was right up the street.
Yeah. And Amelia's, before that was, well, it was called Amelia's, and then it became the landing pad.
Right.
Chris and
but I actually met you there when it was Amelia's, I think, before the landing pad back in
the day. Well, that was the first place I stopped when I landed in Pennsylvania. I think I'll have a beverage here.
Uh-huh. That was a good spot for beverages. It was.
Yeah.
A lot of good times there.
So that was a couple of years worth, and that was a lot of fun.
Uh-huh.
Good Lord.
What happened to your girlfriend that you moved over here with?
Oh, she went back home. She couldn't get a decent... She's a legal.
Uh-huh.
And she was working for a gentleman for a real estate company in Hanalei who wasn't paying her more than like $9 an hour. And she goes, excuse me, this is, and so she couldn't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
So I stayed and she left. I still talk to her and she's doing well.
Did you ever marry?
No.
Huh. Wow. Interesting.
Gave her a ring, but it just didn't go through.
No, but I mean, have you ever been married in
life? Yes, I have.
Oh, yeah. So after she went back to LA, you met?
I met Barbara.
Oh, okay.
And
here on island?
Here mm-hmm. in the islands. Mm-hmm. And we ended up falling in love with each other. And, you know, what do? You get married. Mm. And that's where two of my daughters came from.
Oh, you have two daughters.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
The third one was with Mary.
This is getting more exciting about
the Well, you know, you got to add a little sauce.
Right. Well, you had three sisters.
That's
and
correct.
Then you ended up having two daughters.
Three, actually.
Three daughters.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, with the same woman.
No, two with one and one with the other.
Wow.
So, you know, let's spread it out.
Yeah. And where are they now?
Let's see. Becky is over in Kalaheo.
Ashley, she's on island here.
Yeah. Ashley's over on Oahu.
Wow.
And Kelly is back in Kansas City, Missouri.
Wow. How about that?
So they're all in their late 20s.
Okay.
So.
Any of them having had children? Or?
Yeah, I'm a grand. I'm
oh,
a,
you are?
Yeah, I'm a grandpapa. Unbelievable.
All of them have a kid or just one of them?
No.
Just one of them?
Kelly is the first one to get married. Let's see. Lisa. No. Oh, she's got a kid. That's my sister. Okay.
Uh-huh.
No, they're not married. The daughters are not married.
Okay.
They go, no, we're not doing this.
But they had some children. Yeah.
No, daughters haven't.
Oh.
Sisters did.
Oh.
Do I want to confuse you?
Yeah, okay. No.
Let's not do the
family. Yeah.
No one wants to hear about it anyway.
That's a lot of women in your life, though. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Which makes me really interested in women.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I mean, sisters, daughters,
they're
you know,
all women.
That.
I go, is there another guy around? Can I have a brother, please?
Uh-huh.
Lord almighty, you know.
Yeah, interesting.
Thank God I was the oldest.
Right. So when the whole polo field shut down, then you were probably pretty bummed about that.
Well, all of us were. Fair.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it was.
Right.
Princeville Corporation. You know, I'm not going to say anything about that. But anyway, so polo was over.
Right.
Now it's time to move on. Mm-hmm. And so I did.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm trying to think where I moved to.
When did you get involved here at the radio station? You came along at some point.
Boy, let's see.
For
Sandy Swift was the first one I met.
Oh.
Pretty much. She used to come to the polo matches pretty regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And
she did, huh?
We would... we were gifted by Savage Pearls, this really wonderful microphone deal where you could go on field and it would come right back. So Sandy Swift would go up and down the sidelines interviewing people.
Oh, wow.
And I'd be up in the tower announcing. And, you know, it was fun.
Uh-huh.
It was awesome.
It
was the greatest cocktail party that went on all summer long.
Uh-huh.
A lot of barbecues.
Right.
A lot of great entertainment came down there.
Yeah.
And
like a tailgate party
it
never ended.
And then we had stages come in. There were quite a few people, a big name.
Music.
Yeah. And that's just the way it was.
Yeah.
So when that finished, I moved out of there, and...
So Sandy Swift, she was already at a DJ here at the station?
She was already a DJ at the station.
Mm-hmm.
I came in to do some interviews with her, I guess to promote polo.
Oh, wow.
And that's my first time to the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I hooked up with Dan on the I-10.
Mm.
Now, Dan used to be a regular at the landing pad, or Amelia's.
Right.
And when I was doing security, I'd see him, you know, and we started talking one day, and he said, well, do you want to come up and help me do a radio show? And I said, sure, because I started doing radio back when I was about 17.
Mm.
The boarding school that I went to had just installed a station, if you will, you know, the board and the whole nine yards. You had to have your third class FCC back in those days.
Mm-hmm.
Don't need it now.
But
that was the beginning. And I got on that as WWEB-FM 91.1 megahertz here in Wallingford, Connecticut.
Wow.
I can't believe I remember.
Wow.
So that was the beginning of radio.
Yeah.
But I kept pursuing theater and... did a bunch of stuff and
finally, after 10 years in L.A., I did some movies there and stuff, and then I got involved with the music business. And that was fun because I've met so many people. I worked for a place called SIR in L.A., Studio Instrument Rentals, and there's quite a number of musicians out there, and I know you know what I'm talking about because it was one of the biggest rental and studio rental places around. There was one in L.A., there was one in New York, maybe Chicago. Anyway, those were the days when you didn't know who you're going to be playing with next, and I was kind of a roadie. Mm-hmm. You know, every concert there was, till 3 in the morning, you're on the road picking up amps and pianos and whatever. You know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And you didn't know who you're going to be playing with next. You know, you'd Fleetwood Mac one moment. It would be the Commodores, Lionel Richie one moment. You just didn't know. And that was so fun about it because I was around all this talent. Mm. And I can say this now, but most of the bands would set up in a studio. They'd rent the place for like a week or something. They're getting ready to go on the road, and they would have their equipment all set up. And us guys that worked the night shift, we were all musicians. And so we would just help ourselves. We'd sit there and rock out.
Right.
Just crank up the equipment and, hey, who's going to know?
Right.
Hey, perks. So, yeah, that's what I did after that. SIR, Ken Berry, who owns and Dolph Rempe, they were the owners, and Ken was a polo player as well. And I think that's how we came together.
Wow.
He used to play up in Santa Barbara, and he'd invite me up there and do some polo matches, and afterwards there would be an opera polo party, and they usually had me DJ. Uh-huh. So I'm back to DJing again. Here we go. And this is with albums, okay?
Right.
This is still albums.
Yeah.
But right. He had an entire sound system that traveled. Uh-huh. And so, fine. And there, so it just seemed like in my blood, I guess.
Yeah.
To keep doing it. And right. Then,
so we'll remind the listener, you have a show here, a weekly show on...
Thursdays.
Right. You just recently took over Thursdays from 6 to 8 in the evening.
6 to 8 in the evenings, yes.
Called?
The Local Moco Show.
Yeah. Right on. So yeah. We'll hear you actually doing your own show tomorrow night from 6 to 8 right here.
All good things going.
And you have such a radio voice. I'll tell you, you definitely have the radio voice.
It's those voice
but
lessons.
I didn't know it came from, voice lessons and acting and doing plays and movies and wow. It's so
well, I'm really glad for it because I need to do something like that.
Right.
Obviously, I've got this inside thing that I need to kind of like act or whatever. And radio is pretty cool that way. And they can't see me.
Right. The strange thing about radio, too, for us is we can't see the audience. So,
that's correct.
And we just got our recent ratings, I guess, and they're saying that at any given time we have over 10,000 people listening.
No way.
And if we could see those 10,000 people right now, that would be pretty weird, but we can't. So it's strange because, you know, when you sit in this room here, you feel like no one's listening. But we got a ton of people listening online all over the world about your life. And
sorry for boring you.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing, though, how fast an hour goes? I mean, I guess you're trying to put your whole life into an hour.
Wow.
But it's really not possible. You only just skim the moments. That's why I kind of like to start with, you know, your family, because it's so fascinating to find out, you know, does your mom still in Santa Barbara?
Yes.
Do you ever go back and visit her?
I did. I went back.
Is she doing okay?
I went back.
Well, you said she had a stroke early, you know, a lot of years ago.
She's fine.
Yeah.
She's 86.
Oh, wow.
And I know you've got a grandma or somebody who's going to be 102.
Yeah, that's true.
That's quite a...
Yeah.
Wow. Well, yeah. You've got some strong genes there, buddy.
Do you have, like, family land in Santa Barbara? Or
my sisters live in San Luis Obispo.
Okay, yeah.
So I went back, and we all had Thanksgiving in San Luis Obispo.
All right,
and
nice.
That's fun. That was the last time.
Does your daughters have... Do they know your mom at all?
Of course.
Okay, good. Yeah. And that's a cool connect, having grand...
You know, we're all over the place.
Yeah.
California, Hawaii, whatever.
Wow, I mean, you know, Santa Barbara, Mexico, Florida, I'm like, L.A., Hawaii,
Connecticut.
I'm like, you really did a lot of moving around. And I noticed that little sensitivity there when you said... you know, that you had to move again. So you kind of...
There was a time when I didn't know where I was flying, where the house was going to be.
Right, you have that little bit of that kid resentment of moving all the time, which is
interesting. Well, I always carried one suitcase, carried everything in that suitcase.
Wow.
Just never knew. Where are we going to be next?
Wow. Yeah, interesting. Anyway. So as we're in the last final minutes, there's a couple questions that I've been trying to ask each human that comes in each week. First off, bucket list, like is there something major that you would like to do? Left in your life, not that your life has anywhere close to being finished, but is there something like on your list that excites you?
Yeah, doing my show here at this radio station because I promote a lot of new talent.
Uh-huh.
And being in the music business in Los Angeles, I would love, and I've had a couple of people that have been on my show who I promoted have done very well, signed contracts with 20th Century and things like that. Young, great talent.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you love to have live acts on
I
your
show.
I
love live acts,
right.
And they're music writers. And so if you are into that,
yeah,
and you'd like to be on the show, I'm right here.
Cool.
That's what I do.
So if you're listening right now and you're an artist, musician, and want to play live on the air, Peter's totally into the Commodores, into having you on Thursdays from 6 to 8 p.m. You can just call us here at the station, 826-7771, if you want
Simple
to be on his
that.
Show. Yeah, that's awesome. The other question was, if you had any superpower, well, if you had a superpower of any sort, what would it be?
If I could fly.
Yeah, fly. You're a flyer.
Well, there's something about it, you know.
Yeah, right? Do you fly in your dreams ever?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah. Is it like a... Like, do you flap your arms, or do you just float?
No,
or?
I'm usually in a helicopter that's going down, and I have to bail out.
How's your flying? I'm just curious. Everyone flies different, so.
Oh, you know, it's not just that. I have other things I think about. You know, dreams are weird.
Yes, they are.
They're really good when you get a good one, I'll tell you that. They suck when you get a lousy one.
Uh-huh.
I'm waking up out of this one. I can't get out of this jam. I'm done.
Uh-huh.
Anyway,
you're hilarious. You're funny. You've always been such an interesting person in my life. So thank you for. It's great to know you a little better, the Commodore right here, and I appreciate you coming in today and sharing a little bit of your life. And it sounds like you've had an interesting journey so far. That's for sure.
It's still going.
Yeah, and it's still going.
I didn't know quite how to deal with this. This has been different.
You did great. You did great. It's so easy, see?
I don't know. Anyway, thanks for having me.
You have a special glow. It's interesting. People get a glow when they get to share an hour of themselves with you know, anybody.
That's because I'm embarrassed.
Well, you're nothing to be embarrassed about. But no, I think it's good. I think it's good to be able to share that, and then your memories. I can see your brain, you know, all the memory patterns in your brain going, ooh, you know, your thoughts. And, yeah, it's interesting, your memories and how we see our past.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There they are.
And here we go. Now into the now, because the next program I'm going to bring to everybody is a musical show for the next 2 hours called Evolve, and it's all about going into the now, because truly that's all we have is right now. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thank
Commodore,
you.
Commodore, you're awesome. Thanks. Good to know you. And let's go into this song. This is an interesting one from Rag & Bones called Human. KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea.